This is QC Veterans Roll Call, a local program designed to support Quad Cities veterans and military, their families, and our community. QC Veterans Roll Call is a production of 97X, WXLP, and Town Square Media. Now, here's your host, Gino Berta.
Good morning, Quad Cities, and welcome back. QC Veterans Roll Call radio show on 97X. Happy 2017. We hope everyone had a great holiday season. We're back after a couple of weeks off. We took a knee, and I am thrilled to welcome into the studio the Commanding General of First Army, Lieutenant General Stephen Twitty. Sir, welcome to the show.
Well, Gino, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
We are thrilled to have you here, sir. You know, First Army came to town in 2011. We were thrilled to have you in the community. You're now the third commander, I believe, here since the flag got planted in Rock Island. Just a bit of brief history for our audience. First Army is truly an army of firsts. Under General Pershing, 1918, in World War I, World War II, first on the bloody beaches of Normandy, first into Paris, first Siegfried Line, first to the Rhone River, and has continued to have an amazing history. Sir, we're thrilled to have First Army's representative, their commanding general here. Welcome again, sir.
Well, thank you. That's why we have the motto, First Indeed.
Yes, sir.
Because we were first in many.
Yes, sir. So you've been in town for, I think you got here in August, if I recall, sir.
July 15th.
Okay, sir. And our audience wants to know, what are you and your family's impressions of the Quad Cities?
Well, first off, we love the Quad Cities. I've never been stationed in the Midwest before. My wife is from the Midwest. She's from Kansas. And I got to tell you, the people here are just great salt-of-the-earth people. I've gotten around to meet many folks here in the area, and they love their military here, and it's a wonderful thing to see.
Yes, sir. I mean, from the arsenal, from our veteran support organizations, from Hero Street and Silvis, it's great to hear you say that because, yeah, you've got a community here that, this show wouldn't exist if we didn't have the community support we have. So that is great to hear. Now, sir, you might have heard about the Eagles. That you might, in fact, from your office, you might have even seen some.
Well, I was out running over the Christmas break. I had an opportunity to take almost 2 weeks of leave. And as you know, my house sits there on the Mississippi. So as I was running, I saw plenty of those Eagles out there. And it's a wonderful thing to see as well. And in fact, I was running one day and saw one of the Eagles swoop down into the Mississippi River, grab a fish, and chomp on the fish and start eating it. So that was pretty impressive.
Yes, sir. You're gonna see plenty of it. We have Bald Eagle Days coming up in a couple of weeks, and it really is. It's something, you know, our attitude is, yes, it's a little colder than South Carolina, sir, but we make the best of it.
So, I don't mind the cold too much, and from what I understand, there's much more in store in terms of cold. The cold is coming, and so people tell me that this is not really cold, so I shall see, I guess.
It's coming. hey, if you've just joined us, welcome back to QC Veterans Roll Call Radio Show in 97X. I'm your host, Gino Berta. We are thrilled to welcome to the show Lieutenant General Stephen Twitty, the commander of First Army. Sir, you know, an incredibly impressive bio, and, you know, one of the things we do in the show is we like to talk about leadership. And before we get into First Army, I want to give you an opportunity. When you look back on your career, what are a couple of leadership experiences you had that helped position you to take on this third star at First Army?
Yeah, so it's pretty simple and it's pretty fundamental as a soldier. The first thing is you got to love soldiers. And, you know, you may say I'm in the Army and I'm using the word love, but I got to tell you, I love soldiers. And the second piece of it, you got to love soldiering. And I love wearing a uniform. I love waking up every day doing physical training. And you feel part of a great team. You feel part of a great team that has great values. And so this has been a love of mine. And I can't think of anything I'd rather be doing than soldiering.
Sir, that's true. I know. And you have a lot of people who their saddest day is when they have to retire.
Absolutely.
And put that uniform away. I mean, they know it's time, but they just love it. And, you know, I'm an only kid, and I joke I ceased being an only kid the day I joined the Army because of all the friends and mentors, adult supervision I've had along the way. And I wanted to ask you, sir, when you think of the term mentor, who comes to mind for you?
I have a couple. First and foremost, I will tell you, I was, as you probably know, reading my bio, I've been an aide-de-camp twice. And so one, I would tell you, would be Barry R. McCaffrey, General Barry R. McCaffrey.
Holy cow.
I was his aide-de-camp, and he has mentored me from the day that he hired me, and he still mentors me to this day. And so that would be one. And then number two would be General Lord Alston, just retired from the military, was our United States Army CENTCOM commander, and he retired a couple of months ago. And then I would also say our Vice Chief of Staff of the Army, General Dan Allen, is a big mentor of mine, as well as General Vincent Brooks as well, big mentor. And then I served in war when I was a battalion commander as part of the Thunder Run and the major combat operations into Iraq. My brigade commander was a guy by the name of Dave Perkins. He's now a four-star general, and he continues to mentor me to this day as well.
Yes, sir. Forgive me, I can't recall the author's name, but I have it on my bookshelf, the book Thunder Run.
That's right.
About what?
Dave Zucchini.
Yeah, that's, yes, sir. Yeah, Rock of the Marne.
What? Rock of the Marne.
So you mentioned aide-de-camp, and for my audience, let's take a step back in. Generals are incredibly busy people, and the aide-de-camp, which is something I've never gotten to do. I would love if I ever get the chance. For our folks listening, just give us what exactly is the art and the science of being an aide-de-camp?
Well, the art, I would tell you, is you got to be 10 steps in front of your general, because the fact of it is you do what the generals do not want to do. And you got to make sure that they get where they need to be. And they're so busy, as you stated, things to make their lives better, to increase their knowledge of things, to ensure that they're able to focus on what they need to focus on and the little things you can do for them. So pretty much you're that right-hand man, that assistant that will go everywhere with the general to ensure that he has a good understanding of things that he needs to do.
And sir, I remember in reviewing your bio, if I've got it right, you were an aide-de-camp at both the 2 and the 4-star level.
At the 2 and the 4-star level. 36 months.
Wow. Something tells me you probably had a bit of leave built up after that, those stints.
Well, I got to tell you, and I was aide to probably the two most demanding generals in the Army. So you heard me talk about General Barry McCaffrey. I'm a huge fan of. But I was also the aide to a guy by the name of General Wesley K. Clark, who ran for president as well. Very smart guy, very challenging and rewarding job being his aide, and that was at the 4-star level.
That's an incredible. It had to be an incredible experience. And you know, from a leadership standpoint, when we think about that, you know, and think about our show, sir, is yes, we're a veteran and military centric show, but we also support our whole community. And, whether you're, a middle school teacher, whether you're running a small business, whether you're, a plant manager, leadership all applies. And what is something that if somebody's listening and say, hey, I've never been in the military, but, leadership's important to me. If there's one central tenet about leadership.
Absolutely. Character. Oh, well. Absolutely character. You cannot get anyone to follow you if you have character flaws. And so I will tell you that, character would be my number one, integrity, loyalty. And, particularly when you're putting soldiers in harm's way, they need to know that you as their leader, when times are difficult, you're going to be there for them. But more importantly, that you're going to be true to your word and that you're going to take care of them. It's the same thing out in civilian world as well. All anyone wants is to have a boss with that has character.
Yes, sir. Well said. You're listening to QC Veterans Roll Call Radio Show on 97X. I'm your host, Gino Berta. We are honored to have in the studio the Commanding General of First Army, Lieutenant General Stefan Twitty. And we are talking about military. We're talking about leadership. But let's talk about First Army. Let's talk about this amazing organization. And if somebody, General, if somebody's listening there, they're on their, they're, you know, they're having a cup of coffee and they're like, well, I know about First Army, but what is First Army?
Okay. So first of all, I am thrilled to be the commanding general of First Army. And so just to, the layout, what we do, we are the Army's executive agent to assist the National Guard and Army Reserve in training. And I have 9 brigade combat teams and 2 divisions that help me out in that work. We spend a lot of time on the road ensuring that we understand the training strategies of the Army Reserve and the National Guard, and we assist them with that training. No matter what they need, we're here to assist them, because at the end of the day, we're one team. You know, they may be in the Army Reserve or National Guard, but if they put on this uniform, it says U.S. Army on it. And so we do not distinguish between the 3 Army services, that being active, National Guard, and Army Reserve.
Yes, sir. In fact, First Army, if I've corrected, it's one of the few where you have all 3 components actively engaged in training our citizen soldiers and our warfighters.
Absolutely. So if you look throughout my organization, you will have United States Army Reserve soldiers, National Guard soldiers, and active soldiers. And we do not even discuss the 3 components in my headquarters. We just do the work. We do what we need to do to ensure that soldiers are ready to go into combat.
And that has, you know, for years, First Army was the training agent, had, I think at one time, 12 different mobilization platforms. Right. What, because this question came up, a friend of mine asked me, they said, hey, you know, her First Army has gone through the bold shift, gone through the reorganization. Somebody asked me, I thought, a really good question. He says, what if, God forbid, the balloon goes back up and we've got to ramp up?
Yeah,
I presume First Army would take the lead in that?
We would take the lead in it. And because we had 16 brigades, and as you know, with bold shift, we went down to 9 brigades. But we have more capability now with 9 brigades because we restructured those brigades to where they're functional to be able to train every single skill in our Army. We can do it all, you know, from aviation to infantry. We didn't have that capability before with the 16. So even though we went down to 9 brigades, we built that skill set to be able to train all MOSs. And so that's the first thing. The second thing is we structured ourselves in a way to where if we needed to expand, we could. And so we're working now currently in my headquarters on the ability to expand to multiple MOB sites if need be. We know where those MOB sites would be, and we understand the capacity of them. What we're doing now is putting things in place, such as equipment, medical personnel and equipment in place at those locations. So if we had to go back to a full-scale reserve component mobilization, we can do that. I feel comfortable that we know how to do that. What I think is lacking at this point in time is putting equipment there to be able to handle.
You're listening to QC Veterans Roll Call, a show for Quad Cities vets, delivering honest, relevant, and when possible, entertaining information for our military vets and their families on 97X.
You're listening to QC Veterans Roll Call radio show on 97X. I'm your host, Gino Berta, welcoming into the studio the commanding general of First Army, Lieutenant General Stephan Twitty. We are talking about First Army and the amazing work they're doing to keep our citizen soldiers ready to go if, God forbid, the balloon goes up. And that's military for speak for we're going back to war. Although I should say, forgive me, we're still a nation at war.
Yep.
We're still a nation at war. We've got soldiers on the ground, Syria, Iraq, terrible news out of Turkey. There's another terrorist attack today. So, sir, from a standpoint of, you know, America's been at war a long time.
That's right.
What do you say to the American public who says, you know, yes, we're still in it, we're supporting, but is this ever going to end? What do you say to the people who've got that reasonable thought?
Well, first of all, I will tell you is we're living in an uncertain world right now, so you don't know what you don't know. It is probably the most volatile that has been in my military career and probably in my lifetime. And so what I will tell you from a military perspective, we must be ready. And as you stated, we are still at war. So if you look at the Army today, we have over 180,000 soldiers deployed abroad. Many of those soldiers right now are First Army soldiers that we train. Last year for FY16, we trained 115,000 soldiers that deployed into harm's way. And so I will tell you, as a First Army mission, is that we're training soldiers every day to go into harm's way. And I don't see that letting up anytime soon. And so if you look at the world today, ISIS, we did not even know of ISIS 3-4 years ago. And so we got to be prepared for the next ISIS, the next unknown. And if you look at what's going on in the world today, such as North Korea, Iran, Russia, we got to be prepared for those near peer type of threats, those high-end warfighting threats, such as Korea and Russia. And so I would say I wouldn't be so worried about trying to figure out when things are going to end. I'd be more worried and concerned about let's have a army, a military that is capable of meeting all the threats that are out there today and also meeting those unknown threats of tomorrow.
Yes, sir. Well said. And you know, in this month's issue of Army Magazine, the Chief of Staff, General Melley, was talking about how the future battlefield is going to be extremely austere. And he said he gives that the days of, you know, the camp liberties and the camp victories, yeah, and, you know, those are done. We're going to be out. We're going to have to be small. We're going to be. Where does, you know, with some of the training philosophies, how does First Army incorporate that kind of mission statement?
Yeah, that's a great point. To be quite honest, we've already started in that direction. And so we're training pretty much twofold. So we have a commitment in Afghanistan. We have a commitment in Iraq. And so most of that is counterinsurgency. And so we're focused on ensuring that the soldiers that go to those locations, they get the counterinsurgency training. But we also focused on the decisive action training that you're referring to from our Chief of Staff of the Army. We have spent a lot of time training the forces of today with decisive action training. And so things such as cyber, you know, you heard very little about cyber 15 years ago. We're training cyber with forces that are deploying now. You hear very little about unmanned aerial vehicle threats. We're doing a lot of training in that area as well. Engineers. Our engineers for a long time did not train in bridge capacity and bridge crossing to be able to cross the Mississippi River, for instance. We got to train our soldiers how to do those things that we used to do. And so we're back to training engineers to do that type of stuff. And so we're taking a look at our near peer competitors and the threats that they bring. And we're focused on trying to meet those threats with our training.
Yes, sir. In my head, I had the visual of the movie Patton, where George G. Scott, he's in the river, and he says, "No, it's this deep because I'm standing in it." And it's almost like it's a Back to the Future. We're going back to our
basics.
That's right.
For 15 years, the past 15 years, we have not trained on river crossing operations. And some people may think that's a simple endeavor, but it's not. As you know, you've served. It is a very complex mission set, and that's where we're going back to, those type of things.
Yes, sir, especially when you're at that two-way range.
That's right. That's right.
Well, sir, when we talk about the training, and I loved what you said, how you in the headquarters, it's not reserve, it's not guard, it's U.S. Army, and I love hearing that. And I want to talk a little bit about that. I noticed that now First Army, as before, you wouldn't see someone wearing the First Army patch unless you got to Dick's or unless you got to
Hood. That's right.
Now I understand it. You can be at your monthly battle assembly, and there's going to be someone, a trainer from First Army, to start that pre-training.
That's correct. So we moved past post-mobilization training, and we're also in what we call pre-mobilization training. So when units go to their, when I say units, the reserve component, whether it's the National Guard or Army Reserve, when they go to their monthly battle assemblies, we're there assisting them in training. And so we want to partner with them to ensure that we take them through the first stages of their battle assembly all the way through their deployment. Even when they deploy, we continue a linkage with them because they have to redeploy, and we have to start that training back up. And so we want to make sure that we pick them up from the beginning, take them all the way through deployment, bring them back, get them back into the civilian world, and start that training back again.
That is terrific to hear, because that the public needs to know that, hey, when your daughters and sons go into harm's way, we can't guarantee their safety, but we can guarantee that they will be trained.
Yes.
They'll have the tools, they'll have the techniques, and they'll have the confidence to know that they are as ready to go as possible.
We are committed to training them, and I will tell you, we have two major locations where we conduct our training. One is Fort Hood, Texas. The other one is Fort Bliss, Texas. And I will invite anyone, even the local public here, to come down to those two locations and see the training that we conduct there. We have the best and brightest training our soldiers out there, and they are fully trained before they get on plane, trains, and automobiles going into harm's way.
Yes, sir. And the trainers, they have been there. They have done that. They have lived that.
Yeah, we have a lot of experience throughout the force. And, you know, I pride myself on having 5 combat tours. When you look deep into my formation, I have plenty of soldiers with 8, 9 combat tours. And so we have a lot of veterans that know what they're doing.
Yes, sir. And I want to shift gears a little bit. When you talk about that, you know, the longevity of the military, it's hard to believe I'm going to hit 18 years in the reserve. Doesn't seem like 18 years.
You're just getting started. I have 31 years, man.
Yes, sir, I love it. Thank you. Now I can just get rid of this gray hair. But in all seriousness, sir, it's got to be something, especially for a senior leader like you, to know someone who, when they were Private Jones and now they're Sergeant First Class Jones, or when they were Lieutenant Smith and now maybe they're Lieutenant Colonel Smith.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not asking this very articulately, but I just wanted to talk about what that experience is like.
Well, you know, I stay in contact with a lot of my soldiers, and you know, you grow to love these soldiers, just like I talked about early, and you have a lot of pride when you see your soldiers that have risen throughout the ranks and gone on to do great things for our Army and our nation. And every day, there's not a day that goes by that I do not get emails from my former subordinate. And I would like to think that I had something to do with their success, you know. And that's the great reward that I get out of this deal.
Yes, sir. And I'm going to just guess in your 31 years, you might have second-generation soldiers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what I will tell you is, you know, I get... The reward I really get is hearing from privates and specialists. And so I just finished commanding a division of 35,000 soldiers. And I came in this morning and I opened up my email, and one of the privates out of that 35 man or soldier organization sent me an email this morning. And needed some assistance, but more importantly, remembered me and wanted to just connect with me after the holidays. And that's the joy that I get out of being a general officer, because being a general officer is hard work. The other thing is, being a general officer, you're not connected with troops like you would want to be. I would love to be in the dirt with the soldiers, but I don't get to do those things now. But just hearing from me, that provides a connection to that dirt, you know.
The dirt, yeah. It is something of the military. It is. It is a family, and it's an extended family. And sometimes, you know, we love big, we argue big, but you know, we're one team, one fight.
Blood, sweat, and tears. That's what it's all about. You see us bleed together, sweat together, and cry together.
Oh, sir. So let me. I'm sure we've got people listening who their kids or their grandkids, and they served themselves. Maybe they served in Vietnam or in the first Gulf War, or they were involved with the Long War.
Yeah.
And their, let's just say their daughter or their granddaughter comes to them and says, I'm thinking about joining the military. And they're full of pride, but there's that apprehension. What would you say? And by the way, you're talking to a guy who's got two daughters. What would you say about that?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I would say is it's a noble service. Serving your country, I can't think of anything more noble. So that's the first thing I would say. And then the second thing I will tell you, this is hard work and it's dangerous work. But the one thing that I've gotten out of this is a sense of accomplishment and a sense of teamwork. And the one that I talked about earlier is the values. If you come in the Army, you know, it's all about values. We don't keep bad people around for too long. As you know, you served in uniform. And we try and uphold those traditions and uphold those values that the people's army is what we call ourselves. And the people expect for us to have the highest credibility in the nation and have the best values of the nation. And that's what we strive to do. And so if you want your kids to be a part of something good, join the military. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the Army, even though I'm wearing the Army uniform. But I will tell you, it's a noble service.
And, but, you know, there are other branches. Check out the Army.
Yeah,
first,
like the
of course.
Air Force.
You're listening to QC Veterans Roll Call Radio Show. I'm Gene Oberta, your host. My guest is Lieutenant General Stephen Twitty, the commander of First Army, our neighbor over on Rock Island, doing amazing stuff. So this has absolutely been a fantastic interview. We're so honored. Thank you for getting and being part of our show. Thanks to your staff. I mean, to our folks listening, this gentleman is incredibly busy, and he carved out what little time he has, you know, here to be in the show. We're humbled to have you here, and this is great, and we hope you'll come back. I want to kind of give you the last word. What, sir, are you excited about for First Army? What's coming down the pipe for 2017?
Well, we're going to train about 200,000 soldiers this year. We got a lot going on this year. And we talked about reducing from 16 to 9 brigades. We're going to be extremely busy this year as well. And so what I will tell you is it's all rewarding work, because every single one of these soldiers will go into harm's way somewhere. A lot of people think about Iraq and Afghanistan, but we have soldiers all over the globe right now. You name it, they're there. And so what I would ask the public is just remember not just the Army soldiers that are out there deployed, but all our military that's deployed around the globe that's doing yeoman's work for our nation. So thank you.
Thank you. It has been a pleasure, sir. Please come back. You've been listening to QC Veterans Roll Call Radio Show. Just had a fantastic interview with the commanding general of First Army, Lieutenant General Stephen Twitty. Sir, thanks for being here. First indeed.
First indeed. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to QC Veterans Roll Call, a weekly program dedicated to Quad Cities veterans. QC Veterans Roll Call is a production of 97X, WXLP, and Town Square Media.